it's always very reassuring to bow to the Buddha before we start, because he never looks worried about my talk. I'd actually like to start with a little bit of guided meditation. So, get into whatever position is comfortable for you for doing that. So as you settle into your breath, resting in the flow of it for a minute, now, if you would just be the open, unlimited spaciousness in which everything is riding by, just be that for a minute. Be the unlimited openness itself. Now, if you would be, please, everything that is, little and big, coming and going, near and far, just please for a minute be it all. And now, for a little bit, please be both the complete, unlimited openness and everything rising and falling, each thing. And then for a moment, I'd like you to know that all of this, this vast spaciousness and everything that is indivisible from it arises in the limitless field of your own loving heart. Does there really have to be a dreamer who dreams this dream? Can it maybe be sufficient without that? Okay, thank you. So that wasn't what I thought I was going to do, so I'm reorienting here a little bit. And maybe you are too. Good evening. Bodhisattvas. I wanted to come back for a little bit to the story about Njaku Ochiono that we've been talking about with connection to the Heart Sutra. I had her story in here somewhere. So she, when she was 32, her husband died. And she just couldn't get over it. She was completely engulfed in that heartbrokenness and that grief. And she didn't know what to do. And so she came to the teacher, Bukko, who was nearby. And she asked, "What is Zen?" So kind of asking, can you help, right? Do you have a way to show me? Is there something out there that can help me? And he replied, "The heart of the one who asks is Zen. You can't get it from someone else's words." Which is kind of interesting when you think about right now how it's tempting to sort of cast about, right? If you're feeling a bit, well, more than a bit of anguish in your own life for whatever reasons. And at the same time, somewhere we kind of know, you know, that somehow the way forward is going to emerge from inside, whatever inside means. That somehow what's alive in this moment, what's beautiful, is most reliable. Feels most trustworthy. That our hearts go towards it, bring it in. So she's curious and she says, "Well then, why do you give talks and have them transcribed?" If you can't help me, you know, if it has to be from in here, then what's happening here? And he says, "You show a deaf person the moon by pointing. You show a blind person the gate by knocking on it. Just kind of saying, yeah, on the other hand, I can help, right? The fact that you can't get it from someone else's words doesn't mean I can't help. And so then a deer right near the stream gave a cry. And you know, deer don't, have you ever heard one of those?
Yeah.
It's shocking. Kind of horrifying. Yeah? It's not like a wimpy little hello kind of a cry when a deer cries. It's like somebody's killing me. And cry. A scream. It never occurred to me before, but it's like, that's probably exactly how she felt, right? Whose voice was that at that moment, yeah? And the teacher asked, where is that deer? Can you feel it at that moment? Where is that deer? Where is that baby lying dead on the beach? And closer by, where are those voices? Yeah, that too. And the nun listened. And the teacher gave a shout, and those are usually like, "Cut!" And asked, "Who's hearing? Who is hearing?" So at those words, the nun had a flash of understanding and went out. At the water pipe from the stream, she picked up a lacquered wooden bucket for flowers, which was full of water. Suddenly she's a nun, isn't she? That's kind of interesting. She was a woman, but now she's a nun. Anyway. she picked up this lacquer wooden bucket for flowers full of water. And it's night. She saw the moon's reflection there. It was pretty dark down by the stream, wasn't it? But there's moonlight, yeah. She saw the moon's reflection there, and she composed a poem, which she gave to the teacher. The bucket catches the stream water and holds it. And the pure moon through the pines appears in the water. Teacher Bukko glanced at the poem and said, "Take the Heart Sutra and go." The Heart Sutra that we recited a little while ago. And after that, she had interviews with the master coming and being sent away. Till in the end, the bottom fell out of the lacquer bucket. And she presented another poem of this realization. So suddenly the bucket is a little bit different, isn't it? In the end, she's coming and going and presenting what she's seeing. And that coming and being sent away, each time she's got a question and she's got an experience and she's inquiring. She's inquiring. Who's hearing? What is this? What about that moon that appeared in the water, a reflection of a reflection of a reflection. Where does that light start? And the bottom fell out of all of that. And she presented another poem. In this way and that, I've tried to save the old pail. And don't we all? Since the bamboo strip was weakening and about to break, until at last the bottom fell out. It doesn't say the strip broke, does it? The bamboo strip was weak and about to break, but what happened was the bottom fell out. Never mind holding the sides together. No more water in the pail. No more moon in the water. After Chiono's death, the nun Nyozen of Tokeji used to meditate on this poem as her basic theme. That's something we could do, right? You could do it. All along, I've been trying to hold it together. Yeah, I've been trying to figure out how all this works, and trying to get it. Yeah. Trying to hold together to make it make sense, and when it makes, it's not making a whole lot of sense. It's not holding together too well. Until at last the bottom fell out. When she grasped the essence of Zen, she presented this poem to her teacher. This is this other nun who meditated on it. And don't you love that it's like the way we pass our questions on to each other, generation after generation after generation. The questions come down for us. She presented this poem. The bottom fell out of the bucket of that woman of humble birth. The pale moon of dawn is caught in the rain puddles. So I wonder whether you can feel any connection at all between that and the meditation, between that experience. The bottom fell out of the bucket of that woman. The pale moon at dawn is caught in the rain, in all the rain puddles. Can you feel any connection between that and the meditation that we did? Your experience of the meditation that we did a little while ago? Could it be as the Heart Sutra suggests that if we just let ourselves at any moment, we are free to notice that without any bucket needed, this light, the light that exists in daytime and in the dark of nighttime, that light, that openness, that live spaciousness, that light is in every puddle, by every name, at every time. What a bounty. Can you feel the feeling in there of no hindrance? That there's nothing at all that has to be excluded. There's nothing that has to be outside of it. There's such a freedom in that. Yeah. If we don't have to decide what belongs and what doesn't belong, that's a lot of work, figuring out what belongs and what doesn't belong. Maybe we don't have to do it. So there's a funny connection in there too that I think applies, that I find really being a good companion for me right now. And it's this odd thing that we notice when the bottom falls out of the bucket, that there's in a sense nothing to rely on. There's no bottom, you know, to hold the water. Like that argument doesn't hold water. Think about that connection. But so in one sense, there's this feeling of nothing to rely on. Yeah, if all of my discriminations of, right, you know, this is good and this is not good, and, you know, this is how it is and this isn't how it is, if all of those discriminations are in some way irrelevant, fundamentally, even though they may be practically useful. If what I have called real doesn't feel so real, if in my actual experience, when I open myself completely to it, if I don't find any division of real and unreal, if there's only spaciousness and this together, then what am I supposed to stand on? What ground am I supposed to walk on? So there's this feeling of nothing to rely on, nothing of what I had created, you know, to be reliable, if that's not reliable, there's that. And there's a kind of awesome and awful feeling of being in the dark about that, that we kind of need to get used to, because it gives us real anxiety. It's uncomfortable, yeah? But at the same time then, the beauty of it, the stunning beauty of it, when it's okay that all that is here is just this spaciousness and all of this amazingness that is it at the same time, is the fabric of the spaciousness itself. Holy shit, you know, what else could we possibly want? You know, is that not enough or more than enough? And so we have everything to rely on, yeah? Because there's unlimited spaciousness and there's all of this appearing moment after moment after moment from who knows where, you know? There's a baby that gets, suddenly appears with a body. And there are the things that happen and happened and will happen. And there's loss and death. There's everything to rely on in that way, yeah? Plenty. And so this way of, if our ground is both our willingness to be in the dark in some way, our willingness not to try to stand still on something solid, and to receive everything it is as blessing, then what's it like to live out of that place? And it's not different from brushing your teeth in the morning, right? And sitting down at the computer and giving someone a hug and writing an email and going to a demonstration, and whatever you're doing. And right now, as we feel this surge of love and concern and anxiety and so many emotions in a time of radical change, and there's a sense of urgency to respond, what about that? Yeah? What about that coming out of this fullness and emptiness that are at the same moment in the same place? I was remembering some stories from our ancestors in hard times, in really, really, really hard times. And there are lots of different kinds of stories. You know, when I think Andrew's brought in once a story about that asks, where were you? You know, how did you survive in the hard times? You could quote it better than I can, but it's, there I was, hidden in the marketplace, right? All the time, the whole time. And so that's one response. Another response was someone who stayed in the temple, ready to receive the sword that was coming, and did come to take his life. Another one was one teacher who spent the years of the great difficulty taking people across the river, literally. Being a ferryman, literally. And there was one who, you know, went to take care of his mother and made sandals to support them, straw sandals by the road. Many different responses. And now we have those many different responses. We have people camped out at Standing Rock. We have people steadfastly continuing to do their jobs. We have the whole range of how do you respond in a time, a chaotic time. Many, many responses. We have people who are praying. We have, and so this recently I saw two movies that I would really recommend. I don't usually go to the movies, but the first one was Patterson. Has anybody seen Patterson? You have? Oh, so beautiful. And it's a movie about a guy named Patterson who lives in Patterson, New Jersey. And he's a bus driver and a poet. He wouldn't call himself, doesn't. Exactly. But he writes poems. And that film has just stuck with me so much as a in my heart, because this is a guy living his life in Patterson with his wife, his really, really lovely wife who paints everything black and white. She paints her clothes black and white, and the curtains black and white, and the tablecloth black and white, and she makes cupcakes, and the cupcakes are iced in black and white. And it's just gorgeous, and she's just gorgeous. And you see them every morning waking up in bed, and he wakes up, you know, without an alarm at 6:15. And they're just, there they are in the morning waking up in love, and you just feel their love. And then he goes off to drive his bus. And at the end of the day, he goes to the bar and has one beer. He takes the dog for a walk, parks the dog outside the bar and has one beer. And while he's having his one beer, all of this life happens in the bar. And he is there for it. Anyway, it's a beautiful story. And to me, it is this... he's willing to be happy. He's willing to have the happiness that is. It's very beautiful. I really recommend it. It may be gone, but you'll have a way. I think we may do it as a Zen movie night, actually, because it's completely a Zen movie. And then the other one that I saw, was that yesterday? Was I Am Not Your Negro. Also, very beautiful, very powerful film. And, you know, James Baldwin, and it's all the words of James Baldwin. He had gone off to France to live where he could live so much more and be so much more freely, be himself and write and have a life. That was where it wasn't so hindered by fear all the time. And he came back because he said he had to come back and do what needed to be done. And he did that. He spoke. He spoke out. He spoke with this tremendous moving directness. Spoke truth to power. And I loved that here are two very different responses, both very beautiful. And there's your response, and there's your response, and there's your response. And this is really beautiful. This is what a life is made of. Each of us doing this life. Yeah. It's very beautiful. And I trust it. I know I can trust it. Not having to do with outcomes, but because I know that I can trust what is really beautiful. And this is that. And so everything to rely on, the moon in every puddle, reflection of reflection of reflection, blessings without end.